Aloha, everybody, and welcome to another interview show with me, Dolphinus, your host, here on Dolphinville Radio. These broadcasts are being made possible by Photon.net, an internet host service provider and specialist in web hosting and other services. They also do internet broadcasts and also feature virtual reality tours, among other things. I'm so grateful to my friend and owner of Photon.net, Randy Barris, for his generosity. Hope you find the show is enjoyable and gives you something to contemplate as our evolving, miraculous world never ceases to amaze us. So thanks for joining us on this program. Today we're featuring futurist and corporate shaman Jim Channon. Jim Channon's character represents the epitome of the Renaissance man from the last century. His expressive quality is one of the rugged individualists out of the mold of Hemingway and Faulkner, and it's an edge that was polished from being a professional soldier and a military strategist for much of his life. One of his key contributions in the early 1980s was the Manual for the 1st Earth Battalion. At the time, a cutting-edge model featuring the futurist view of New Age principles reinterpreted for the military mind. As a lieutenant colonel in the Army, he has commanded men into battle and actively supports the efforts of men and women in the field today. To his credit, he does, however, speak with reservations on the current administration's use of military force in the world, and envisions instead a positive use of that military to rebuild our ailing ecology. My impressions of Jim was that of a noble man tied to a sacred, though lost, cause. A man's man trying to find his role in the changing atmosphere of the new millennium, where polarized ideas no longer hold their meaning, and following a specific belief system may well be outmoded by a new science of thought and a new understanding of the multidimensional realms. Another part of me felt as though I was facing a mirror image of myself, and in many respects, seeing a direct opposite. Although I may disagree with his basic philosophies on the use of power and force, and as well as the nature of the evolving paradigm, I can still appreciate Jim and his refinement and his worldviews as they have been polished. But most of all, I enjoy and respect his utter uniqueness as one of the number of colorful bohemian characters that inhabit this island paradise and are contributing to the ongoing world paradigm shift. We can all still work together, and in spite of such differences, I believe, can start to give birth to this new world. So, without further ado, here's Jim Channon.
Begin here.
Well, aloha. This is Douglas Dolphinus from Dolphinville Radio here on the Big Island of Hawaii. We're sitting with the very friendly and affable Jim Channon. But just for everybody out there who's not familiar with Jim, this from his website, you're recognized worldwide as an original pioneer of the corporate visioning process. You've been trusted strategically to design 10 of the world's 100 largest corporations. Jim has been described as a cross between Buckminster Fuller and Walt Disney. He created advanced visual language, AVL, and the virtual reality exercise, VRX. And he's done cultural voyaging with tribal groups worldwide. Presently, his social architecture looks towards a new Pacific Renaissance. You're a lover of life, the fastest magical marker on the planet, and spellbinding storyteller. Is that how you describe yourself?
Is that all? Well, actually, how one describes themselves is one of my pet subjects. Absolutely. Because I think in the end, our state of being is our best and probably only communication. Anyway, things people remember after time. So if I were like in my Polynesian body right now, I'd tell you, well, let's see, I'm a man of the Ka'auhu homestead Ahu Pua'a, and my wind is the Makani, O Kohala. My channel is the Alinui Haha, and my view is Haleakala. In other words, the Polynesians love to describe themselves in terms of the land that they chose to live on, you know, and if I were more my druid self, you know, then, and my druid and my my Polynesian combined to make me a tropical Highlander.
Oh!
Yes. And my brother is actually a banyan tree and a cat, you know. So, I noticed that most bios, first of all, don't say anything about your relationship with biology, which is kind of a shame. My relationship with biology is sort of, well, I shepherd 104 acres of primal forest. I have 3 acres of permaculture, upon which are 100 roughly species of plants, 12 of which are in danger. And I have 9 ponds and all the critters that go along with that. And, you know, a house cat, a wandering mouse cat, and a field cat.
A full family of
family of felines.
Well, what brought you to Hawaii? I mean, this is a paradise found for you. How did you even bring Hawaii into your focus and get you here?
These past lives? On my 50th birthday, I noticed that I had moved 50 times. And I've been around the planet 50 times. And I thought, well, where is your home, Jim? And the answer was a big, well, I don't know. So I got my magic visioning list out, and I said, if I lived in the perfect place, where would that be? Some place where I could feel the impact of all four seasons, but not be bothered by the troublesome ones, where I could see the sun set in the ocean, where I blah, blah, blah. And took 3 years to find the place. And this was
place meaning the actual location, or did you already know that it was Hawaii versus
No. I was in Australia, just about moved to Western Australia. I was checking out Burma and Thailand and Bali and simply matching the list to whatever I could find. And then one day, down the mountain road, under 3 rainbows, I said, okay, get out my list. And stood on the land, it crawled up my legs and said, you're mine. And so 12 years ago I began building the homestead.
Oh, fabulous. Well, it sounds like you used the process, your own process, position healing thyself, using your own tools to find your paradise.
Fundamentally, that's, I live an imaginal life. Everything is about imagining what I want, and then with that focus, noticing where it shows up and then picking the daisies as they appear. And at some level, it's really good to be ruthless about that, because you can really dial it all up.
Ruthless meaning unrelenting, not necessarily you know, trampling over people.
Well, ruthless is okay. For me, you know, for me, it's paradise now, no excuses.
Well, you've had a military background. This is kind of interesting, because most people in my audience and the people I'm associated with often think of the restricted parameters that goes along with being in the military. You know, up at this hour, you know everything has been told to you as to what to do by chain of command.
The robot world.
Exactly. And yet, you've managed to transcend that robot world to come up with this imaginal vision. And now you're turning it back on the beast, so to speak.
Well, of course, the mythology about the robot world, I hasten to say, is completely off. People who come face-to-face with death, and face-to-face with changing weather, and face-to-face with hundreds of young people that they have to take care of, and know 50 officers from 50 different countries, and have 5 years of postgraduate school function of the Army, are simply not asleep. They are the most awake people I have ever met. In fact, the United States Army is the most advanced chunk of civilization I have ever found anywhere on the planet. Maybe with the exception of a couple of Burmese girls.
Well, one would question then the significance of how that energy flows through the body of a war machine as the point of focus of all of this awareness.
Yeah.
And what is it doing to us on a planetary scale?
Right. Well, the last time I sat with... the Army selects 30 majors every year, men and women. And I'm invited to come and be one of the elders.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them last year, well, what is an army? And only one of the 30 said, it's basically a war machine.
Mm-hmm.
The others were somewhere between, it's a social invention,
mm-hmm.
it's America's melting pot,
mm-hmm.
it's America's prototype society for 30 years out, because it melds and has melded the sexes, the races. It has done peacemaking work, which is more powerful than even the United Nations. And when you go to war these days, you notice we attempt to make the war part as short a period of time as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And the stabilization...
death and destruction, you're saying. At least
right.
A blatant CNN version of that.
Right.
It still goes on covertly behind closed doors.
Yeah, shooting people and breaking things.
Yeah,
right.
Well, for the cameras.
Yeah, and the notion of the future army is 3 days maximum for the destruction part, taking out a nervous system,
mm-hmm.
and 30 days to reestablish the stability.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice now, wars are different. Teams of armies now work together, and the primary motivation is stability. Very often it does involve taking out a certain element of the population,
mm-hmm.
but the essential ethical base
mm-hmm.
is to reestablish a new set of governance when
mm-hmm.
possible,
mm-hmm.
and we don't always do it perfectly, but I guarantee you the problem does not lie with the soldiers.
Mm-hmm. No, I would never blame the men in the field for orders that are being given down from that chain of command. Of course, nowadays we're all questioning that chain of command just after the recent election, and of course it becomes a political arena, which is really different than the military arena that you're talking about. You're talking more of a discipline in the tradition of the martial arts, the tradition of the monks even.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Warrior monk is the archetype that I used in the Army
mm-hmm.
when I wrote the 1st Earth Battalion
mm-hmm.
Field Manual
mm-hmm.
for the Army.
Let's talk about that. What is the 1st Earth Battalion Field Manual?
Well, it's an artifact that was printed by the Army for the officers of the Army as a compendium of all the New Age and esoteric technologies that I could assemble in 125 pages.
Wow.
In both graphics and writing. And it came from a moment when I invited this Army think tank to the Officers Club to be initiated into this mythical unit. I simply was faced with a situation where I couldn't give an information briefing about so many things that affected state of being. Not state of doing, state of having, state of knowing,
mm-hmm.
state of being.
Mm-hmm.
And ceremonies and rituals do that. So after this ritualized dedication of soldiers to the earth, they made me, with formal papers, the commander of the 1st Earth Battalion.
I like that.
Very powerful.
Indeed, indeed.
That mythology and that field manual have been in the Army for 30 years.
Wow.
And I mean everybody, including the number one boy, knows what it is.
So where is the concept? How is it being used today in our world and in our society?
Well, I think generally speaking, armies are reaching more into debt disaster recovery, more into the environmental side of things than people generally know. And they're definitely prepared to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke this morning on the telephone with a friend in Iraq who is part of a stress control battalion
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
therapists, hypnotherapists, massage therapists, visual therapists are taking people that are traumatized right off the front lines, putting them through this humane, wonderful healing technology so that they don't go home from a war permanently wounded, you know.
Well, it must be tough being put into a combat situation Anybody whose soul is trying to open to itself, to its own being,
exactly,
is very vulnerable in all conditions. So when faced with the condition of having to combat or kill another human, it must be the most traumatic thing that one could experience. Man is trying to balance or rebalance those energies within that being so that when they come back, they're not a dysfunction in the society, as we've seen in the past, especially with the Vietnam era and the Gulf War syndrome that we all have heard a lot about. But I question the ethics of the environment and the so-called stewardship of the environment that you mentioned, only because of the evidence that I've seen relative to what the Navy has done to the oceans and what
right.
they tend to do with the technologies,
right.
i.e. the LFAS, which we all have had first-hand experience with here over the last 5 or 6 years.
Right.
So, I mean, that's where it comes into me, where I say, what you're talking about is for the individual expansion and awareness. And
right.
I love that that concept is finding its way into the mainstream through the military. And I honor you for what
well,
you've been doing for that.
Well, and if you get into the psyche of the group of people that are still in charge of our government,
mm-hmm.
you have to remember, they remember the 30s when nothing worked. They remember the 40s when we fought a war that we didn't even know was coming. We were terribly unprepared. We lost almost every battle we fought with the Germans. And they recovered barely from that. And it was a rough time. So they're still of the belief that there is no excuse for a nation not being totally prepared and never sneaked up on. So,
it's rather ironic in this atmosphere.
Well, if that translates down into the military is then obligated to study every possible means to bring war to a close
mm-hmm.
at the quickest possible moment. And so they have investigated things that have interfered with the environment over time. But listen, if you wanted to recover the entire environment on this planet, think of this. Armies are perfectly suited to replant, bring the skin back to the world, we'll bring the moisture barrier back, recontrol the weather. Marines are beach people. They can fix reefs. Navies can restock oceans. Air forces can clean up
sure.
the atmosphere. It's such a perfect shift.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what?
What's going to bring this shift on?
You're not going to have to fight with the people in the military to bring the shift on. The shift is going to come if the ocean starts rising, you know, and all of a sudden all the political wangle-dangle gets less impressive than what's happening to us physically.
Well,
at that point, I know, it's later than you'd want.
Yeah, and the media is totally controlled by that machinery that is wanting to strip the resources and put the planet in peril.
I wouldn't say that under the right circumstances, the military wouldn't act under its own power.
Hmm.
Now, some people
that's
might...
anarchy.
Some people... Well, it's priority.
Uh-huh.
And we know full well that dirty water and poor conditions kill people and start wars faster than anything cool politicians can do. And we know that as studied warriors. And the soldiers of the American Army are in touch with soldiers of almost every other army. And they go to school together, by the way. So they know of their ultimate responsibility. Nations, national borders do not include the planetary commons. So 2/3 of this planet is uncared for by national governments. It's a very obsolete idea. And under the right circumstances, the armies would just do what they have to do.
Hmm. Well, that's encouraging on one level. I know that you've translated a lot of this, shall we say, spiritual warriorhood into the corporate markets, which, you know, again, a lot of the popular belief is that the government is pretty much influenced and run by corporate special interest groups. And now you're finding yourself in the boardroom of some of these Fortune 500 companies and literally
right.
shaking up where their value systems are. How does that work for you?
Well, I know that standing on the shore watching the corporate ship go by and whining about it is not nearly as effective as joining them as a pilot in the bridge and saying, could you just, you know, go over here about 6 knots, 6 degrees.
Yeah,
you know?
That was the brogue on that one. Yeah. That was your seafaring druid.
Yes. The guy is there. My ancestors are very important to
indeed,
me.
Indeed,
you know,
indeed, indeed. Well, your book, Pirate and Gypsy, and people find that intriguing, you know.
Yeah.
You've been everywhere, you've sailed the seas, you've seen the equator change and the aurora borealis and,
yes,
and all of that.
And I know full well that conflict is actually the beginning of airing a problem that needs to be solved, and without a little conflict, nothing happens. Look at any good relationship. Peace per se, in a perfect sense, is not a useful tool, except as a rest after a little growth.
Okay.
And well, war is also not a useful tool, so we try to keep that to the minimum, but the conflict is the way we grow. And if one looks at their life, they'll find they grew a hell of a lot more from the mean teacher, you know, and from the scolding finger than they did, in most cases, from the sweet pat on the head.
But in corporate America, profit is the bottom line, and they will cut whatever they can to get to that bottom line. We've seen evidence of that over and over again. How can you change that paradigm if that's what they've grown to love?
Well, at their very core, human beings are all quite conscious. I have never asked a group of senior corporate people, I don't care how aggressive they were, the question, what is your higher purpose, without them stopping everything and answering the question, even if it took a day of their so-called scheduled meeting.
They have that answer in their mind.
They wanted that answer.
Oh, yeah.
They all want that, you see, it's they're not a different breed. They're
people. I understand.
They're trying to take care of their village.
Part of the mechanism is what my point is. There is a mechanism at work here.
Yeah. And
there's a robot, the mechanistic, the matrix. All of that stuff is what's been brought to life in our consciousness, in our culture, society.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fascinating how more people than ever before are privy to this type of information. And you're a big part of that with what you're sharing.
Yeah, but I'm not going to let you get away with that archetype either, that stereotype. People who do a lot in their lives to make something work are way more valuable to us than people who sit back and whine about things.
I agree.
The New Age people let us down terribly. When they dipped into this loving culture that came in the 60s, and they failed to reproduce it for us. So, be sure that people who do a lot every day to further their organization are really good folks and dependable. The problem we have right now is that corporations are not tethered to the land. So they don't quite feel the consequences of their efforts. So my new book, I'm recommending that all corporations become villages, and they actually run the villages. And the villages are sustainable, generative, full-on, multi-dimensional global villages. And that way we can bring those guys back down in contact with reality.
Well, one thing occurred to me, and this was over the last couple of years anyway, that our society has really grown out of a tribal tradition. Certainly the Army is a personification of the tribal tradition.
It is.
Unfortunately, what's happened over the last 12,000 years or so is that tribal tradition has been sabotaged, because we have not been allowed to connect to the source. And that's the common element that has kept all these factions as separate factions that ultimately become warring factions because of the differences that are perceived as not being connected to the same source.
I agree with you totally.
Yeah. So how is your work bringing that source back to the corporate boardrooms and the new leaders who are taking us into the new tribalism of the 21st century?
Well, first I would say, if you look at the last 100 years, nations, I think, have killed 160 million people, mostly because of ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And people went along with that, pretty much. Now,
or died.
Or died, yes. Mm-hmm. The other side of that is that all that hustle and bustle to create and defend one's country produced the internet, produced long strategic communications, built airplanes, built ships, and basically built the infrastructure of the planet that we know today, mm-hmm. with 10 billion emails every day flashing mm-hmm. around the planet, 40 billion telephone calls, 65% of the people wanting the planet to work according to the United Nations principles, you know, all having similar heroes, you know, the planet is connected. Now, you got to ask God the question, you know, was this all worth it or not?
And what answer does he give you?
Yes, it's all part of the drama. It created the...
You, as God, certainly have created the paradise for yourself, and you're advocating to other people through their own volition and their own sense of commitment to the source can find and establish your own
paradise. Live here now. Accept the gift that creation is a function of cooperation with the quantum universe, and we've proved this, what the belief, a lot of times, but because of limiting beliefs and fear-based beliefs, people don't believe they have the right to expect paradise in their lifetime.
Yes, and that's part of the paradigm-busting work that you're doing, is it not?
It is, totally.
Yes. Because we put all of this beautiful, synchronized energy that is represented by the military or even corporate America. There is a synergy that happens with this synchronization. Unfortunately, I believe that because the disparity, the separation, the illusion of veil of separation that all of us have been operating on, because that's been, it's been given to us, that's been a template given to us, and we're melting these walls now. We're allowing those things, in my mind, to liquefy, to become more fluid in their nature rather than the rigid belief systems. We're allowing more flexible interpretations of reality, and multidimensional awareness is becoming part of that new matrix that we're all recognizing.
It is. It is. And at the same time, there's no excuse for people not accepting their sovereignty. Institutions will only become self-centered to the degree that the people who created them allow that. We're about to discover ourselves as a planet and as a civilization, and everybody is going to have to step into that place called I am a sovereign being, and then we're going to have to get our little organizations and institutions together and tell them what we want them to do again, because they're not in charge. They're our own invention. We just let them run along a little too far without saying, hey, no, we don't want that.
Well, of course, we would be suffering under the illusion that the democracy actually functions the way it's supposed to, as was conceived, when that indeed is not the truth.
No, no. And, or, to be kind, it was just a social invention.
Yes.
It is only corrupted by time and events, like all social institutions. Hello, no fault, no blame. And it's obsolete. And
is it still the best foundation for the social architecture of the 21st century, though?
No.
Okay, what is the best foundation for that?
Individual communication on a global level, the internet, which is the global library, everyone being aware of what's available in their own personal presence inside their being and around them. The reinvention of the homestead, the neighborhood, the village, from the inside out. The communication that we have is so pervasive now that things that are unethical are automatically smelled out for what they are. We don't have to have a lot of thugs around beating people on the heads and putting them in jails. I'm sorry.
Well, some people believe that's the army's role in the world politics.
Yeah, and to some degree there's still pockets which may deserve it.
So you're totally, from a political standpoint, the idea of going into Iraq and eradicating that particular regime that we put in place is a necessary thing of the American army or the military force of the United States.
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
No, it might not turn out as bad as people think. And it's definitely a clue for certain older nations than ours who are abusing their populations to wake up. And that will happen. Some good things will happen as a result of it. But the way the whole idea was introduced was extraordinarily insulting and arrogant and unnecessary. There were four generals in the army who refused to serve under that administration, and people don't even know that.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. This is the rudest administration that I think in any history of the United States.
Well, and as it were, let's say it wasn't. and let's say it's still obsolete, would we get rid of it any faster?
Good question. I think over the next 7 or 8 years, we're seeing the social order changing very rapidly. The amount of information you alluded to with the internet, for example, makes sure that information continues to grow exponentially and that more people know more things than ever before in the history of the planet.
Absolutely.
That could be a dangerous thing as well. And we may be seeing us going towards some kind of a ultimate confrontation, the Armageddon scenario that seems to be called for by the present administration and the followers of that fanatical religious right.
Hey, that's always an option. Not mine.
I agree. And part of my reason for coming to Hawaii 7 years ago was that I felt that Hawaii, in all of the archetypal ways of thinking about it, and all of the own personal incarnations that I felt connected to, but more importantly, the fact that it was surrounded by ocean and was the most isolated and oceanic of all of the so-called civilized areas on the planet, and that it was midway between the Eastern and Western philosophies, somehow melding together in the spirit of aloha, openness, and acceptance. Wow, that's where I want to be for the 21st century.
It's
and that's
wow.
what's happening here. And you obviously felt and did your evaluation and did your famous evaluations using all kinds of graphs and teams.
Yeah, no. And nerd alert.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I agree with you completely about that. And, you know, there's a generation or two of young people that are being seeded into this planet who already have the roots inside of them for the next civilization.
Well, I want to talk about the star-seeded children, the crystal children, the indigo children, as the various names that have come up. I also want to get into some of the things that you've been doing here as a community to bring in theatrical and stimulate the idea of that a village mentality of what you're talking about, but a real model, a real template can be demonstrated. And I think the Big Island and Hawaii as a kingdom, as well it should be and will again return to be and is already materializing as its own sovereignty, its own individual being, and its own village tribal system, which is integrating into the 21st century. I really feel that I'm part of that, and I'd love to hear more about how you're integrating your feelings. So let's take a little break, shall we? So we'll be back in just a little bit after we've taken a breather. You're listening to Dolphinville Radio, dolphinville.com. Okay, well, we're back after this little interlude. The time zone that we happen to be occupying now is a transcendental, multidimensional time zone where the construct of 3D reality is something that we have an option.
Ooh, I like that.
Yes, it's
I like
single.
It when you talk like that.
Okay. Yes, this is part of Jim's persona, the other side of Jim. You become the clownster, you become the gypsy pirate, you become the provocateur, and you love to do these performance pieces in front of a variety of audiences. We've talked about the army, which I'm sure are quite amused by your taking them into other non-militaristic type
of
ways.
Yes, they're just people. They love it.
But you also, you formed an important part of a community, the village concept that we talked about, right here in North Coast, overlooking Kohala. Kohala means the humpback whale comes here on a regular basis to return to its home where it was born. And we are part of that reality, and that reality that has been very, very near and dear to me, because that's what brought me here.
Right.
My connection to the cetacean sentience on this planet is what made me come to Hawaii initially. Once I got here, I thought, well, the land supports this mentality. It doesn't get in the way. There aren't countless numbers of distractions that pull me away from being able to stick my head in the water and listen to the whale song, listen to the chirps, and feel the resonant vibrations of the residents here of the ocean, the marine mammals, my friends, my colleagues of the multidimensional realms.
Right.
So I formed a relationship, and where I live is over a sacred bay, which has many, many interesting things and histories that are affixed to it. Captain Cook discovered this part of the planet for the Western world and mapped out a way to find it back only 200-odd years ago.
Yes.
And yet here we are on the very bubble between the ancient and the new, between what is known and unknown, between the configuration of an energy pulsing point on this planet that's very real. And a place in our history of this planet of consciousness which seems to hold the key to the future of who we are. And you found it, I found it. Now what do you do to stay here, and how do you maintain that reality and still be a spiritual being? In other words, how do you be spiritual and make a living?
Well, fortunately, all of my former work, you know, my sort of second incarnation as a strategic designer doing visions, I have enough of that going on. And a little Army retirement doesn't hurt, you know. I did end up 20 years in the Army and had a lot of fun, by the way. Got to play with some big toys. But now, with 3 acres under my feet, this is my painting, you know. Every day, I go out with my brush and I add a little this or cut a little that, you know. And there are 12 endangered Hawaiian plants coming in tomorrow that will find a very special place in amongst all the other things. So, there are no windows on my house on one side. You know, there is no separation from me and the prana, you know. Would I screen out the power of that humidified air coming 3,000 miles across the ocean and cleaning itself out? Not in on your life. Boy, I snort this place.
And the energy doesn't stop. This is this channel in front of us, and just to the right is one of the most ferocious energy charged channels on all the planet.
Yeah.
Between two separate tribal factions, the Maui tribal faction, which is just across the channel, we can see it outlined and vibrating with its tantric magic, even as we sit over on this side.
Delicious. It wasn't good enough just to have one ha attached to it. It had to have a ha ha, you know. And I love the nature as healer, for example.
Well, you're visioning the land. Isn't it that a banyan tree told you to build an amphitheater? How did that work?
Well, how it worked, of course, is actually how life works a lot of times.
Okay.
But suffice to say, I thought after bringing this beautiful brother banyan tree here 10 years ago and putting it down and building a bridge through the middle of it, I had the most fabulous gateway to nothing that you could imagine.
And
so the gateway said, "Brother, what are you going to do inside? It's just pasture over there, you know." And so I thought I'd do a little pond. And negotiating with the pond liner man, he ended up selling me more pond liner than I ever thought I needed, but for the same price as I thought I was going to pay.
Some more ponds.
So I dug a big crescent-shaped pond hole, and I brought the village up, and we played the drums, and And we put the pond liner in, and then the pond liner leaked and leaked and leaked. So I sat on the side of the pond liner one day, and I looked across at the other side of the crescent shape, and I said, "Oh my God, it's a theater stage." At that point, I dropped all my plans for the pond, put in some little ones, built the theater. And on four more occasions, I kept dropping my plan, according to the nudging of Mr. Banyan, I believe, and eventually, now I have just a section of a village, which has informed me of the village we are now doing on 1 square mile, just over the hill.
Mm-hmm. Who are the villagers?
The villagers are people who have lived here a long time. A beautiful ethnic mix of some of the most at-home people you will ever meet in your life. And in case you ever were full of pretense about anything, they'll remind you in short order, you know, noe, brah, you know. Other villagers coming from various parts of the planet who are attracted to this notion of a global village. And of all the things you can do when you build a village that's important is attracting Akamai people is the biggest thing you can do. Brains and heart, you know, all the rest will follow. And we know pretty carefully what the carrying capacity of our land is here, so we'll not abuse that. But culture, my gracious, Friday night, I did a pub crawl in a town that doesn't even have a traffic light. Now, figure that out.
Yeah, well, that sounds like you've got the best of both worlds going, or multiple worlds going.
That's the way, that's where visioning will get you, called the best of all worlds.
Yes. Well, let's talk about some of the other non-physical worlds that coexist here. The Vedic realms that are very much a part of your land, and as I mentioned earlier, the sentience of the beautiful cetacean race and other species that seem to coexist with us here. What's your sensation of those, and how have you come to terms with that?
Well, my general sensation is that many dimensions are closing in and becoming available to us. The more relaxed and available we are, it's really hard to listen when your radio station is playing all the time. So, to the degree we turn our own radio station off, a lot of things. Well, I, being a blood druid, I'm particularly fond of having relationships with very large rocks. And I have been on them when they were moving around way more than you would imagine any rock could. And I have also followed their instructions about where they wanted to be put. And, you know, it's not an active conversation, but it's there. And I noticed when I did that, they were all of a sudden much lighter than I thought they should be. By the way, they knew where to go on the wall that we were building. I didn't have to kind of find a place to fit them. Just mold them over in the general direction, and they will land where they need to.
An ancient dynamic, perhaps incorporated by the builders of Stonehenge or Avebury.
Sure. Sure, but the notion that anything is not alive and not conscious is the idea, you know. We just have to open our language. It's actually a language center to allow that in. And I have great relationships with my frogs, who punctuate the day much like the church bell used to in medieval England, and tell me when the pond needs to be sort of cleaned out a little more than it is. And I have relationships with the fish in my pond, who become the best mosquito trap I have. And I noticed that the trees occasionally will be a little more insistent. Now, trees don't speak to me. I don't really hug them. That's not one of my things. But they do need a certain amount of light. So if you don't put your trees in the right place, they will fight each other. So that kind of mismanagement is something that I'm learning to deal with. And moving things when they are, you know, or making noise, you know, a tree when it's unhappy will let you know. You just look at the shape of its hands and if they're pointing down.
So ecosensibly or sensitivity, so-called permaculture, are these things that you're incorporating in your
Permaculture is the man created version of a system of managing nature.
Yes.
Then there's the Vedic side, which is please just pay attention to the plant. It will tell you. Every sound an animal makes is actually an audible emotional sound. If you just listen for the emotion, you'll know right away. Whale or cat or dog or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and the thought that they might not have an equal right to be just where they are is like something that is, to me, maybe a little bit more unconscious than even war. People who clear every single insect away from their home, you know, I mean, who do they think they are?
Especially here in a jungle area.
Yeah.
I live in a way that I allow the jungle to be hopefully in balance with me. I don't close any doors or
have anything
that's containing it. And somehow the mosquitoes, the Devic realm of mosquito that I went to and said, look, here's my deal with you. I realize that this is your place first. You were here long before and will be here maybe after I leave. And you have to do what you need to do. So when you come around me, I only ask that you can take everything you want from me. All the blood, I have plenty. Just please don't leave any marks and don't let me know that you've been here and we'll be fine.
Yeah.
And so far that's been a nice pact. I don't wake up with bumps. And I've seen people who have come to my place and they are forever swatting away.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that get bit all the time.
Yeah. A lot of those people create war wherever they go.
I think there's something to be learned there.
Yeah.
Something to be learned there. How do we combat talking about fear as the main deterrent to self-being awareness? That seems to be the biggest obstacle that we have as individual consciousnesses to receive and to be a part of that allowed balance, which is our right as a conscious being.
Right. Yeah, well, it'll be a long and evolving kind of instruction, but for me, every time I notice someone is in anger or envy or any of those states, just to remind them that what's happening to you while you're having this? And when they notice that they're doing themselves in with their own idea that's based on fear or jealousy or something, after a while they get it, you know, it's a self-torture thing, and after a while, you know, you do the math on that, and you don't live very long if you live like that, and you're pretty unhappy most of the time in an internal way. So,
do you feel that there really is a cultural creative legion of millions, 50 millions it was predicted, that people are out there who are consciously starting to make these decisions about their own happiness, their own stability, their own well-being. Do you feel that that's a reality, that's a real statistic?
I think it's very real.
Okay.
And it used to be, when you dealt with a very large population, like 6 billion people, that it would take 100 years to get that idea across. But that was before we had 40 billion telephone calls a day. And so the capacity to go into jump time or reduce the learning time for everybody to move into that state, I think, is radically shifted now. And
what do you see happening in the next 8 years? Your best visionary projection.
First of all, the most important thing is going to be we're going to become completely disillusioned with all the institutions that we used to rely on to do everything while we were just sort of going along in our own little trance. Secondly, I think nature is going to slap us around just enough to say, excuse me, you know, the little games you're playing right now aren't very aware of all the rest of us that are out here. Please get your act together. And then I think that the thousands of little ideas that we know of that have actually been spoken in the army and in corporations and whatnot will have a greater airing. And the indigo kids will infuse from below. The Vedic natures will come in from the sides. And yes,
there's something coming from the outside, like ETs.
Well, yes, bless their little hearts, you know.
Their little hearts, the little guys, yes.
The little guys,
the little
big eyes. and all the rest of them.
Yeah.
I think that's the comic book version of what most of us think is going on.
But what do you think about that now that we're on that subject? I know that it's been of interest to Joan Ocean, a good friend, and we've talked about the idea of saying yes to the mentality that there is an extraterrestrial sentient race, or multiple races, as some people, and there's certainly enough evidence to going over what has been available and what has been tried to be held, that there are signs of life other than outside of the Earth's realm. Do you feel like, have you had experiences that you can share?
Yes, and it's a work in process,
okay,
as we say. My idea of the galactic is a pencil sketch, but it fills in more and more every time I take the time to tune into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that in the life of any planet, once it's obvious that a civilization has emerged through all the trials and whatnot, there is an obligation on part of the galactic family to say hello. And I think the hello is coming, and it's already here. If you really look at crop circles, you'll realize that they are simply little cartoons of orbital dynamics where people are saying, "Hi, I live in a solar system with 8 planets.
Mm-hmm.
4 of them are inhabited, you know, and whatnot."
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the diagrams, and then here's where our black hole was. You know, it's pretty basic.
Or here's a multidimensional mind construct that you can play with if you so desire.
Yes, right.
Or here's a reflection of the way consciousness fits together on a hierarchical way that you can access if you just let it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, these kinds of things
and
are obvious.
Getting to the bottom of it, if you were God, and you had a galaxy to deal with, and billions of conscious entities to entertain and grow,
mm-hmm,
can you afford to do anything less than drama?
Mm-hmm.
Is all this conflict and running around and worry and emotional stuff not part of an everyday movie that is about as entertaining as it can possibly get?
Mm-hmm.
Do we really want to shut that all down and have just peace?
Mm-hmm.
And I love peace at the right
time. Actually, I'd like to see a little bit more of myself and the balance of peace.
Yeah.
The divine feminine coming into balance with the divine masculine. That's what I see happening. And the conscious growth that is springing up in every which way.
Right.
And even the incoming of these other sentient intelligences to show up that attitude, that planet Gaia has got to be a balanced condition or it will not exist. And it is a state of mind within each of us as our own planet Gaia that the responsibility should take place. And I do believe that once it begins and ends there, the planet will take care of itself. Planet Gaia is very intelligent. It's been here for a long time, and it will probably far outlive our little species. You've been listening to Dolphinville Radio, www.dolphinville.com. Thanks for listening. So we're back with Jim Channon. We're talking about multidimensional awareness. We're talking about global globalization, a planetary consciousness, Gaia coming into her own to start to really have a beautiful individual interaction with our own personal Gaia meeting the top. You've given great ways and demonstrated how we can work in cooperation with the land. Your garden is a demonstration. It becomes the template for how the earth can function. Wouldn't that be a fair assumption?
more and more. We're at the phase now where we can generally organize plants so that they work for us and work with each other a little bit, but we are entering a phase where we will build permaclusters where, if there are five plants, everyone will contribute more than one thing to the group, and the group collectively will synergize. The word sustainable is a little bit like clean up your room, you just made a mess, and we just want you to put it back the way we want. No, nature is more creative than that. We can be generative, you know. If we put nature together in the right way, it can exceed our expectations at a phenomenal level. A coconut tree, in its lifetime, gives three kinds of food: the oil to cook it, the bowl to make it in, the utensil to eat it in, the table to put the utensil and the bowl on, the chair, the floor, the wall, the roof, you know, and some nice aromas and salves to put on your body while you're enjoying it.
Yes,
like,
sure.
If every citizen in a human body could do that much, we'd be really happy.
Yeah, true. We could switch to a bamboo building material community as opposed to using woods that we have to cut down vast old forests for. There's many ways. If we just start consciously looking at ourselves as entities that have to co-create and coexist within our environment, it starts with all relationships as well. If we can begin to conceive of ourselves as a planetoid and that our needs to meet another planetoid, there has to be that intersection, that overlapping of the two universes that are done in a respectful and yet co-creative way. That's part of the things that the dolphins demonstrate with Pod Mind. It's part of the things that you allude to with Village and Global Consciousness. It is a cooperative, not necessarily you have to give up anything, but you are merely finding your harmonic frequency amongst the chorus, the people who are glorifying our existence.
Right.
And I, you know, that's what I believe in anyway. This leads me to your current work, because I believe your information is all pointing us towards these kinds of sensibilities. So you've got different things going for you. The book, you've got a play, you've got the website, which is an ongoing growth. I love the website, and for any of you out there, you can go to see some of Jim's work and videos and a variety of things. He's able to use the web in its most current form. The most recent technologies, you can see multimedia, streaming audio and video on his side as if it's as effortless, using the most up-to-date technology, and you grow with that. That's what the information bubble is all about.
Yeah.
JimShannon.com.
That's all you have to.
And Arcturus. And I like Arcturus because Arcturus is the star of gladness that the Hawaiians use to guide themselves from Tahiti to find us here. And it is sitting right over this island all the time. Joan actually believes that she's been contacted by a sentience that says they're coming from that part of the galaxy and identifies themselves as the Arcturians.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've had any encounters, but I've definitely felt an interaction, to call it a Hokulea or anything else.
Right.
It's just one label that may limit it. But, I don't know, what is your interaction with these things?
The few times that I've been entered into communication with a transmedium or somebody, something like that, very often when I spoke about Arcturus, where I think I had recently lived, there's this great cheer that goes up, and a lot of frivolity and a few dirty jokes. I mean, this is a place of joy, and where the culture is consumed with play. And just like the amphitheater on my land, where I produce a playful event every season, you know, as a good druid should, and the little boutiques in our town, which, I mean, I restored the bamboo restaurant with Joan Steffi at one point, and now there are literally dozens of little places that are as good as Chinatown in San Francisco, Melrose Avenue in L.A., you know, you name it, the Ginza. So, we have been so damn busy with all our doing and all our making and all our industrial age stuff that Americans, among others, have lost their sense of play at the level that it should consume us. And what do you say is the, I say the industry of the future is play. the most powerful moment in a relationship is playful. Ask any woman I know, you know, what the premier quality in their partner would be. It's playful. I mean, consummate, goofy, happy, childish, playful, dancing playfulness.
But you have Dionysus.
Okay, don't use that word die.
Okay. You're
nice. I'm not too familiar with that particular guy, but I accept. You know, more things is not bad. A polyphrenic personality to me is more healthy than a monological personality. Schizophrenia is only an invention created by fearful people who only wanted to stay in one personality.
They put up the walls and then they couldn't find their way out.
Right. Yeah. You know, ask my lover if she doesn't like being in bed with five different guys in the same evening. I'm sure she'd say yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Now we're traversing into areas. New sexuality of the 21st century.
Ooh.
How does that look different as we let go of the Puritan ethic?
Make arrangements, don't make relationships. Be devoted, don't have commitment.
That's a good one.
You know, devotion requires no scorekeeping. You know, they didn't quite meet all my needs. You know, they were deficient. You focus on that and you'll get that.
Yes.
Living in different places a lot of the time. Seeing each other seldom. Not sleeping in the same bed. Having other partners of the same sex for arrangements that are not sexual, but are fulfilling and very intimate. I'm afraid the new world is a far cry from the old one. And when we were small farming villages, it wasn't helpful for people to be fooling around. That would really blow the whole system, you know, responsibility for kids. But people that are self-actualized, don't have, or past their child-bearing part of things, there's a whole new level of freedom out there, which doesn't include tying yourself together around the pole of commitment. My God. Well, if you want to really work on all the bumps and bruises inside, go ahead. You know, it's a good way. You'll get it.
Well, we had the pleasure of listening to a presentation the other night, an art show and poetry reading, by a couple who are trying to break the old myths, break these old restrictions about our sexuality, about how we feel about each other as individuals. And it's very bohemian in nature. I love them for what they're trying to do there. And they're up against the wall, because basically, as many reporters now have said, there's a moral majority in the American mind that doesn't want abortion and doesn't want, you know, same-sex marriages and doesn't, it seems to be rearing its head. To me, that's always an indication that it's just about over. Whenever something is popularized to such the nth degree, it usually signifies the last hurrah.
Yeah. Another way to look at that is that the people who don't want things to open up live in situations where opening up isn't as good an idea as people who live on the coasts and in big cities where opening up is a good idea. So we don't have to mash them together under either of the banners. We just need to honor that country folks can have tighter set of rules to play by if they want, and that makes them feel comfortable. And liberals who live in the city and want to meet people from other worlds and other cultures all the time need a more flexible palette to play by. Hey, there's space for everybody.
What is your book about?
My book collects all the answers to the questions that I have asked senior leaders in governments and industry and the military about their higher purpose and their visions for the future. And the collection of all those visions and all of those states of being and all of those community mores are now condensed in this one book. And basically, it is a book of our potential as a planet. Not our plan. There is a little planning, you know, included, but our news media has so saturated us in our problems that we have lost the sense of our potential. This is but it'll help people regain the sense of who we can be and how quick we can actually get there if we want to.
Or refocusing by just waking up to what's available.
Yeah, which is the key to conflict. If you ask two people in the conflict what their vision is, all of a sudden the discussion shifts. And we need to live in those imaginal worlds, in that visionary state of mind. Problems are usually created by people trying to sell you something and tell you that they have something you need. So, that age is over, my good friend, and thank you for asking me questions that helped me say that.
Well, thank you for being here, part of this program. I hope we'll have more opportunities to see how this thing, grand unfolding, continues. And look forward to it.
But that would be
thank
my
you.
Extreme pleasure.
Thank you, Jim Chana. JimChana.com. Thank you for being part of it.
I loved it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So this is Douglas Dolphinus here in Dolphinville saying so long. And remember, be well and swim free. I'll see you next time. This is Dolphinville Radio, brought to you by Photon.net, your internet service provider.